Thanks, Honourable Chairman, comrades, friends. Thank my opponent very much for having the courtesy to arrive on time to attend this evening. It's always good to see a Conservative who's willing to engage in democratic debate. That's what I have written down. Now on to what I actually have to say. There are two political illusions which need to be disposed of this evening. The first is that the so-called socialist countries were ever socialist. The second is that the so-called free world was ever free. And for over half a century, there has been a curious political double act between the Communist Party and the Conservative Party. In fact, this double act has reached proportions tonight where both of them have totally disappeared from the face of the earth. Perhaps taken it to historical extremes. But both the Conservative Party and the Communist Party have always stood up and they've always said the same thing, oddly enough. That if you look at Eastern Europe, you look at the Russian Empire, there you will see socialism. When there was a minority coup in Russia in 1917, carried out by a small, arrogant leadership on behalf of the working class, without the support of the majority of the people in Russia, the Communist Party came into being and they said, this is a great socialist revolution. Socialism has come into being. And the Conservative Party, like the ventriloquist dummies, came along and said, that's right. This was a socialist revolution. Here you see in Russia the beginning of this awful thing called socialism. When Stalin, a monstrous dictator, was in power in Russia, the Communist Party said, yes, Comrade Stalin is a very good socialist. Comrade Stalin has to carry out his purges of persecution and torture and the murder of millions because it's in the interest of socialism. The Conservative Party came along and they said, that's right, you see, Stalin is indeed a socialist. Stalin is murdering people because that's what you have to do to run socialism. When the countries of Eastern Europe fell victim to the rule of Stalinism in the late 1940s, the Communist Party said, look what's happened in Poland, Czechoslovakia, all over Eastern and Central Europe. Socialism has at last come to govern these people. And then came the echo from the Conservative Party. And they said, that's right. Everywhere we look in Eastern Europe, it's all gone socialist. Never mind what's going on in the minds of the workers. Never mind what ideas there are. This has been a socialist transformation. When the Warsaw Pact countries introduced their lethal, murderous nuclear and chemical weapons, the Communist Party, you remember reading it? What did they say? They said, these are socialist bombs. These bombs are bombs of liberation. And as they come landing down on your house, they're going to hum the red flag as they blow your family to pieces. Conservative Party came along. They said, well, it's true. Can't deny it. Communist Party are right. We've got to defend ourselves against these socialist bombs. We've got to have some good, decent, Christian, democratic bombs, like the sort that NATO have got. And so year after year, decade after decade, we had this total political nonsense that here in Eastern Europe, in countries that were police states, that were dictatorships, that were intolerable to live in, here you had socialism. And then the bloody cheek of it is incomprehensible. Those people who for years had been imagining that socialism was alive and kicking in Eastern Europe, they came and brought us the bad news. Socialism, unfortunately, died in its sleep in 1989. Socialism is now dead. And all of you know, as well as I do, you can't pick up a newspaper these days, you can't switch on a television, you can't listen to anyone who is an expert without them saying, socialism is dead, it's a terrible thing, it's a shame, or it's a good thing, we're pleased. Either way, they tell you that socialism is dead. They tell you about socialist dictators like Ceausescu in Romania, who was such a great socialist, that the Queen actually gave him a knighthood. She made him Sir Nicolae Ceaușescu because she appreciates a good socialist when she sees one. She said, this man has had great services towards the Romanian working class. Give this man a knighthood. He ought to have it. We have had so-called socialist tanks in Tiananmen Square in China. We switched on the television and we were told, we have in Russia. I don't believe it. I switch on every night. I wonder, should I join Alcoholics Anonymous? Is there something the matter with my mind? They tell me now about conservative socialists in Russia. And the conservative socialists are the ones who don't want capitalism. And I sit there and I ponder it and I reach for my dictionary and I phone people up who are wiser than myself. I can never get through. And then I still am none the wiser. We hear about socialist cities in Russia, which are no longer socialist. Leningrad, and they say, no, the people in Leningrad don't want to be socialist anymore. They're going to name themselves after a Democrat. So they called it St. Petersburg, because Peter the Great, you see, was a founder member of the Social Democratic Party with David Owen. That Peter the Great was more arrogant. And
impossible.
Socialism, they say, is now dead and buried. That's a story. And everywhere, you go, oh, well, you hear it. You say, I'm a socialist. They said, you should be dead. I'm the one who kept alive. I'm the dinosaur who survived. Well, I can't ask the Communist Party this evening to explain this phenomenon. I can't ask them why it is that for years and years they defended these dictatorships, and now these dictatorships have gone away, and why they told us it was socialist. Because the Communist Party have disappeared. The Communist Party have done a very sensible thing. They sold all their bound volumes of Lenin's works. They brought out a manifesto and they said to Neil Kinnock, look, you're a bit too left-wing, you should toe the line. And they folded up shop, they closed, they packed up. They said, look, anyone will sell the franchise to McDonald's or Whitby, anyone can have it. We don't want it anymore, we don't want to be the Communist Party. What do you think we are, nutcases? We don't want to be representatives of the dead. So that's it, socialism has disappeared for them. But then the Conservative Party, I was going to ask him this evening, no wonder he didn't come, a bastard. But what I wanted to ask him was, what about the Conservative Party? They tell us socialism is dead. And why is it that all of these people, these wise people, because you admit they are wise people, we're talking about, you know, we're talking about Sir Alastair Burnett here. I'm serious. Why is it they keep telling us that there was socialism in Eastern Europe when there were no signs of it? And so they say, well, you see, the reason that there was socialism in Eastern Europe is because they called themselves socialists. Haven't you ever read the constitution of Poland or Hungary or Czechoslovakia? There it says in the first line, we are socialists. But you don't judge a society by what it says about itself. Because if you did, then you take a look at East Germany, which was probably one of the most tyrannical, despotic hellholes in the whole of Eastern Europe up until 1989. And what was the title of East Germany? The German Democratic Republic. It's the only country in the whole of Europe that had the word democratic in its title. So according to these people who say, well, you've got to believe what they say. After all, if it says it on the bottle, I'll drink it. Oh, you swallow it, it's piss. Well, never mind. They said it was whiskey. Well, according to those people, the German Democratic Republic was a democratic country. You cannot judge something by what they say it is. If you do, then I will start to call myself Luciano Pavarotti and bring 100,000 people next week and I'll be singing in the rain. But then these people who say, well, look, socialism did exist. We know it existed. It was there, it died, it went away. You say to them, they say, well, look, in those countries, you had state ownership. And state ownership of industry is socialism. Nationalization is socialism. And then I say to them, but who was the first person to bring in nationalization in Europe? Who? Bismarck, the German dictator, the man who in the 1870s passed the laws called the anti-socialist laws to forbid the dissemination of socialist literature in Germany. And he was the first person to introduce a state-controlled post office, and then started to have state-owned industries as well. So, if that is supposed to be a proof of socialism, I would have to ask the Conservative Party, were they here? Who was it who first nationalised industries in this country? It was Gladstone's Liberal government. It was Disraeli's Conservative government. In fact, the Conservative government brought in almost as much state control as the Labour government has ever done. So if we are going to talk about socialism, whether it is alive, whether it is dead, whether it existed, whether it didn't exist, we need to do something very simple. Something which is very rarely done, including by people who call themselves socialists. We need to define what we mean by socialism. And so I'm going to put before you this evening a clear and a logical definition of socialism, which I would suggest to you is the only acceptable definition of socialism. Socialism is not a scheme or a policy for running the capitalist system. Socialism is a fundamental alternative to capitalism. The two ways of running society are totally incompatible. You cannot have a bit of socialism and a bit of capitalism. In a socialist society, all of the means of producing and distributing wealth, the factories, the farms, the offices, the hospitals, the media, the means of communication, the means of transportation, all of these resources will be commonly owned. They will belong to everyone. They will belong to no one. They will belong to the community. In a socialist society, there will be democratic control of social affairs by all the inhabitants of society. The dictatorship of unelected boardrooms and the dictatorship of oppressive state bureaucracies will come to an end, because there will be no more boards of directors and there will be no more state machine. And this will give way to the conscious rule of men and women and children over our own lives, in our own communities. And why not? Because that's the only meaningful democracy. In a socialist society, all production will be for use and not for profit. Food to eat, clothes to wear, houses to live in, entertainment to enjoy. It's the most exciting and dynamic political proposition that's ever been put. Dead? It's the most dynamic and electrifying proposition you can think of in a world with the pain and suffering that surrounds us. And in socialist society, all people, without discrimination of gender or ethnicity or sexuality or age, will have free access to the goods and services of this abundant world around us. Without money, without buying and selling, and all of that obsolete rubbish, we'll have free access to it, because the world is ours. And I'll put it to you that such a system of society has never been tried in the course of human history. Let's take just one example of these so-called socialist countries. Let's take Poland before 1990, when the Communist Party were routed in the elections of June 1990. And let's ask ourselves whether those characteristics of socialism ever applied there. Were the means of production owned in common in so-called socialist Poland? Well, of course not. 80% of all the land in Poland was privately owned by small farmers. In fact, there was a greater privatization of land ownership in so-called socialist Poland than there is in Britain today. In Poland, under so-called socialism, the whole of industry was in mortgage to Western banks. There was $28 billion of loans from Western banks, which meant that 3 out of every 5 zlotys produced in Polish industry had to go in loan repayments up until 1990. So that wasn't common ownership. Was there democratic control in so-called socialist Poland? Far from it. There was rule by a small, thuggish political elite who lived in the big houses, who drove the big cars, who had special hospitals and special schools and special stores allocated to themselves. There wasn't any democracy. There was the rule of an elite. Was there production for use rather than profit in so-called socialist Poland. Of course there was production for profit and not need. And that was why you had the obscene contradiction of food being priced so high that workers were starving, so that it could be exported in order to repay the loans to the Western banks, whilst the factories were churning out industrial goods for export. And was there free access to wealth in so-called socialist Poland? Is there free access to wealth in so-called socialist Russia? Is there so-called, in so-called socialist China, free access to wealth? Well, to ask the question is to get an answer straight away. Of course, there was nothing of the sort. So if socialism has never even been tried, and that's the proposition we're putting before you this evening, fellow workers. Socialism's never been tried. Then it can't have failed. You can't witness a death of something which has never been born. You can't watch something collapse which was never established. And therefore, it is the most pernicious and disgusting propaganda that is coming out of the media all over the world today, which says socialism is finished. Don't think about it anymore. It was tried, it failed, it died. And I was going to put it to my opponent tonight, and I wish very much that he was here to have to answer this. Stand up and tell us, did socialism exist in those countries? And if so, in the light of what I just said, give us your definition of socialism to show exactly how it existed in those countries. Well, my opponent has given what's called a parliamentary answer. In other words, he's in the bar probably somewhere. But on one point, we can agree with a lot of other people. We can agree with Tories. We can agree with people who are sincere about wanting a freer society. And that is that the destruction of these police states, the overthrow of these stinking tyrants who ruled over Eastern Europe for decade after decade and thought that no one could ever remove them, is something that we should celebrate. It was a great moment in history. When, in 1989, the workers in vast numbers stood up and they said they'd had enough of the dismal regimentation and the coercive insecurity. They've had enough of the lies in the media, the distortion in the schools, the book censorship in the universities. They'd had enough of the party officials who were arrogant and bullying and thought, like Margaret Thatcher, that they'd never ever be removed because they were so great. They'd had enough of the dogmatic religion of Leninism. They'd had enough of the grand illusion which was fed to them that they were living in a happy and prosperous country when they were living in a miserable and impoverished land. Those people said, we've had enough. And that was a lesson which gave great hope to those of us who are socialists. Because we rely upon the strength and the intelligence of our fellow workers to be able to say in the face of the greatest depression, we've had enough. We're not putting up with it. So that was a good thing. But then what happens when you remove the dictators? What happens is that you discover that we socialists and them conservatives are cheering for rather different reasons. Because the reason that the conservatives were cheering about what happened in Poland and Germany and Hungary and Czechoslovakia and all the other countries was not because they thought this was the working class standing up for themselves, but because they thought this was the working class begging for entrance into the so-called free world. And in the free world, they would be members of the free market, where every wage slave has a chance to dream of being an entrepreneur. And every entrepreneur has a chance to dream of being a millionaire. And every millionaire has a chance to dream of being a billionaire. And in the free world, the symbolic features of capitalism would be everywhere to be seen. There'd be a bank on every street corner. Not a bank of credit and commerce, incidentally, otherwise the entrepreneurs would soon be wage slaves again. There'd be a stock exchange, and there'd be insider trading, and there'd be privatized hospitals, and there'd be privatized prisons, and there'd be special fast lanes on the motorways for people who've got the right kind of credit card, and there'd be bailiffs to throw you out of your house if you couldn't pay the rent, and there'd be poll taxes, and there'd be fast food restaurants for the people who can only afford to eat crap, and there'd even be race riots, so that as unemployment goes up, the working class can be set to turn on each other and fight it out. This is the free world of the multilingual dollar, the exchangeable ruble, and the invisibility of human needs, unless they can be heard by a cash register. We are the inhabitants of this phony free world. We're the inhabitants of a world which is lying to us. We're the inhabitants of a society which is saying to us, you're free, and you're free to the extent that you don't demand real freedom. This is a world which has nothing to offer the workers of Eastern Europe except continued poverty, continued inequality, continued anxiety, and more political liars coming along to take over from the ones who were found out. And in the so-called free world, there are other unelected dictators. Okay, they've got rid of the Ceausescus and the Zhivkovs and the Honeckers and so on. But there are other unelected dictators waiting to take their place. The three men who own between them 80% of all the newspapers in this country alone. The 1% of the population in this country who own between them more of the accumulated wealth than the poorest 80% all added together. The unelected directors of the multinational companies who between them monopolize the control of food, the control of textiles, the control of almost every important resource in the world. They're the unelected dictators. We never see them. They don't come on television. They don't even claim to be democratic. They are the dictators of the free world. The claim that capitalism has got anything to do with democracy is one of the most enormous lies of the 20th century. Capitalism is a dictatorship of those who possess but do not produce over those who produce but do not possess. None of that has changed in the last 2 years, has it? None of that has altered. None of that is new. It is a dictatorship of property over the lives of the wealth-producing majority. And then there is the claim that once they enter the West, the workers of Eastern Europe are going to become prosperous. You know, a year ago, the financial press constantly read the Financial Times, the Wall Street Journal. They constantly used to say the same thing. They used to talk about something called the Polish miracle. Polish miracle, I don't know what it was. I thought it had something to do with the Pope. So I used to read it. What is this Polish miracle? The Polish miracle was that all of these economists from Oxford, from Cambridge, from Harvard, from, I don't know, I think two of them actually escaped from Broadmoor last week. They all went over to Poland and they performed a miracle. What was a miracle? They revitalized the economy with the wonders of the free market. Let me give you the figures. In the course of 1990, Polish industrial output fell by 26%. This must have been a miracle. Last month alone, Polish production fell by 9.1%. Real wages over the last 12 months in Poland fell by 32.5%. Old age pensions over the last 12 months in Poland fell by 10.4%. And inflation is still running at twice the pace of the inflation level in this country. So this was some miracle. We're waiting for the curse. And what about the prosperity which the free world brought to the workers of East Germany? Let's have a look. In 1989, according to the World Bank, East Germany was the 11th most productive industrial country on Earth. Now, up to 80% of all East German factories have been closed down. Why have they been closed down? It's not because they can't produce anything. It's because the market cannot afford to have these factories competing with them. The market's not large enough to take all of this East European industry, and so it has to be jettisoned. It is estimated that there will be 5 million unemployed German workers by the end of this year, most of them in East Germany. Wages in East Germany at the moment are 40% of the level of wages in West Germany, which means that you have literally tens of thousands of East Germans having to make 2, 3, or 4 hour journeys each way every day in order to get into West Germany, where they can earn more than twice as much as they can earn in East Germany. The monthly cost of childcare in East Germany has increased from 30 to 800 Deutschmarks over the last 6 months. 83% of East German women used to be employed. What that means is that in the course of 6 months, you're going to wipe out a large section of the workforce in East Germany. So let's ask the question, has freedom come to Eastern Europe? What has happened has been a combination of the collapse of state capitalism, which cannot and could never be a way of running capitalism, because you cannot plan a system of economic anarchy, and the resistance to and overthrow of tyrannical dictatorships. The Leninist plan for capitalism has been a disaster, and it has no future. It never had a future as far as this party was concerned. But into the graveyard of Leninism have come the vultures of multinational capitalism. The World Bank, the IMF, the Bundesbank, the boys from the G7 Brigade, all of these people have arrived. And these are not benevolent societies. I don't know whether any of you wondered, what is the World Bank? Is something like a friendly society that you join at work? What is the IMF? Who is the G7? I've never even heard of the G7 till Alistair Burnett told me about it the other week. I'm sitting there in my room, somebody said, the G7 are arriving. Clear the streets. I thought it was a free concert in Hyde Park. John Major playing the lute. Badly. The G7. Well, what these things are, we know. Because we've been told by the American president and his underlings in the British government. This is the creation of a new world order. I don't know about you, but that worries me. It worries me a hell of a lot more than the Fourth Reich, the New World Order. These people aren't going to stop at Austria. They want the world. Be clear about it. They are not looking towards Eastern Europe or the crumbling Russian Empire for any different reasons than they're looking at Africa or Southeast Asia or Latin America. They are looking at where they can invest, where they can exploit, where they can plunder. These people with their new world order are bringing the policy of the gun and plunder in defense of profits. Maybe there are some workers in Eastern Europe who are very pleased about what's happening now. Because, you know, desperation creates perverse desires. And just as when Nazism came to an end in Europe, there were people who fell in love with Stalinism because they saw it as an alternative. Now that Stalinism and Leninism have come to an end, there are people who've fallen in love with the G7, New World Order. But you only have to look around you at the economies of Britain and America, at the current recession which is wiping out sections of the working class at a rate which even 5 years ago workers down here in the southeast wouldn't have believed possible, which is bringing about record bankruptcies, record repossessions of houses, which is bringing about the most disgusting problems on the streets around us of kids having to go around begging because they haven't even got a prospect of any money coming in. And what you see is that this is the new world order. You want to see the embryo of the new world order? Take a look at Camden Town Station as you go home tonight, because that's its reflection in the mirror. So it would be the greatest folly, the greatest tragedy for workers of Eastern Europe to jump out of the frying pan of socialism, which wasn't socialism, into the fire of phony freedom, which doesn't make you free. Because the only freedom that capitalism knows is the freedom of the minority to exploit the majority. Comrades and friends, in conclusion, I want to say this. Freedom is not something which drops out of the sky. I know that there are various theories. There are those people who say, you know, in Russia, everyone was unfree. Suddenly in 1985, Gorbachev came along. He was such a good man. He wanted to make people free. He went around. He had a beautiful wife. Rubbish. He wanted to save his neck. What happened to Gorbachev was he arrived. He realized that all the shops were empty. Everyone hated him. The only thing left were bullets, and the workers might get hold of them. And he said, quick, let's do something. And he came up with a word called glasnost, and openness, and he's made sure he's left the door open, I can assure you, so that he can get out. And that isn't something that falls out of the sky. Freedom isn't something that comes out of nowhere. Freedom is something that has to be struggled for. It has to be struggled for intelligently. In other words, you've got to have the ideas of freedom. It has to be struggled for militantly. In other words, you don't just talk about freedom without recognizing that there are dangerous and violent forces out there who want to stop us ever having freedom. And it has to be fought for democratically. In other words, the only strength the working class has got is that we are many and they are few. And the prerequisite of social freedom is that the world shall be ours. The world and all of its abundant treasures, which we now give as a gift to the ruling class, has got to be taken away from them. Because freedom means the right of every man, woman, and child to own this planet as our own, to possess this world as our own. And when we have free access to all of the wealth of the world, whether we're from the east or the west, the north or the south, black, white, young, old, when we have that, then we'll have freedom, then we'll have socialism.